The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Yes, it's your money, not my money, not anyone else's money. It's your money, and that's why we called it that nearly 21, 22 years ago. So here we sit behind this microphone. We've been here a long time. I was actually contemplating, you know, at some point, when do I stop? And I decided whenever they kick me off or I decide to stop, because I really enjoy being here every single week with all of you. And hopefully it means something to you, too. I've been here during shuttle disasters, the Great Recession, COVID, the whole bit. And I remember each time it motivates me more to continue to show up and give up whatever it is that's on my mind or whatever information I think is important for the community here. I remember Don Pratt, station manager back in the day. How did you get on the radio? Well, I'll give you a quick story. I was around 30 years old. And I was at a conference up in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and it was a financial conference. And I was on a bus and heading to a dinner or something. I happened to sit next to a guy who, in our terms, a big hitter up in that area, just kind of talking to him about, you know, how he does things, what he does. And he said, well, I have a weekly radio show I do here in the Twin Cities. And I go, well, that's pretty cool. And we talk about it. I go, that's what I want to do. I want to do a radio show. So as innocent as that seems and sounds, it is true. But here's the thing. Most people in my business, right, because I have a real business, I'm not a radio guy. This is what I do for a side hustle. Station doesn't pay me. I don't pay the station. I'm here because they allow me to be here. Every other radio show where you have a financial professional that actually has a real practice, that has a show, they pay for that time. They pay big money for that time. So I'm grateful for that opportunity. But here's the thing. I didn't know you had to pay for time or people expected that. So I show up, found a person that knew Don Pratt, the station manager, and made an appointment to come see him. And I said, hey, Don, I'm David Hayes. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. So here I am, 31 years old. And I just said, hey, I've been wanting to do a financial talk show, not like you hear on the national news or media, but something that means something to people locally. So we can talk about local things that come up. You can talk about local, you know, whatever it is. And he said, you know, I've been thinking about more local programming. When do you think you can start? Well, of course, be careful what you rope, right? So that was probably in the fall of 2001. And so I actually started coming on the morning show. Back then we had a morning show, and I was introduced to the audience. And then that February, I would do a little minute, you know, of stuff and just get to know how things worked. And then it was that February of 2001 when I started. So here we are in 2024, 23 years later, I guess, and we're still kicking it. So hopefully you still enjoy it as much as I do. All right, I also found something interesting that I wanted to start maybe kicking off every show with. You know, I used to have Buy the Numbers with Mick Higley, which I loved. It gave me little tidbits to talk about. I always like to give my report, my market update on what happened last week and then talk about what's happening this week. I'm going to skip that this go around. The Fed's talking here on a Wednesday and a Thursday. Wednesday they're going to start talking. But here I am recording on Wednesday because I have a charity golf outing on Thursday, so I had to come in a day early. So I don't have a lot of Fed news for you, except that I saw the jobless claim numbers were up on Thursday and it increased the chances of a rate cut in September, the probability to 100%. Wouldn't that be cool to start to see rates finally come down? I know it'd make a difference for my son out at Royal on the East Side selling cars that rates would come down. It's one of his biggest hurdles, he told me, is getting people banked on deals out there. But I have this First Trust morning outlook. It's a Monday morning outlook. And I've been getting this for years, and honestly, I read them sometimes, but this one just happened to hit me between the eyes, and I wanted to share it with you. All right, here it goes. They start off with, now this was written by Brian Westbury, chief economist at First Trust. So if you want to follow Westbury, he's a great guy to follow. Usually right, always right. It just timing sometimes wrong, but always right. So here's what he said. Listen, if you listen to enough politicians, it won't take you long to hear about the lack of affordability, healthcare, drugs, daycare, and housing. This was going on well before inflation returned after COVID. Everyone wants affordable things, right? But the concept of affordability is made up of two components, the price of something and the income of the person who wants to possess it. There are complicating factors in every market. So let's focus on housing, which is really the reason I'm bringing this up. This is near and dear to my heart right here in Bloomington, right? Everyone's complaining about affordable housing. Almost everybody thinks home prices and rents are way too high. He uses a different word in his commentary. Many blame this on greedy landlords like me and investment firms that are buying up apartment buildings and homes. President Biden, prior to his withdrawal from the race, said he wants to impose a form of national rent control on corporate landlords. There should be no doubt that a typical home today costs much more relative to income than it used to be. The median price of an existing single-family home that sold in 2022 was about $390,000, which was 5.2 times higher than the median household income of $74,580. That year, that's the most recent year we have data for, in 2022. By contrast, go back to 1968, the median price of an existing single-family home was only 2.6 times median household income, which means that the median household would be not 390, but more like 150 or $200,000. So as recently as 2011, the bottom of the housing bust, the ratio was only 3.3 times. And at the peak of the boom in 2005, right before everything crashed, it was 4.7. So no wonder so many people are finding housing very hard to afford. And he went on to say, this is not due to greedy landlords and home builders. Government entities of all kinds restrict building, thank you, Monroe County, and add massive costs to go through regulations. That's what our issue is here, folks. I mean, I'm not trying to get political on you. It's just math, which all limits housing supply. And don't forget, the inflation caused by the excessive money printing that we went through. Many workers in the U.S. have not seen their wages keep up. On top of this, the U.S. has allowed massive immigration, which is fine, right, in some cases, which increases the demand for housing, while home builders have not built enough new homes for basically 15 years since the housing bust back in 2007 and 2009. But the least talked about issue with affordable housing is the income side. Today, federal and state government expenditures plus the cost of complying with government regulations take about 50% out of the entire GDP of the United States of America. In other words, working Americans on average are left with only 50% of what they earn. If government used that money to do things that were more productive than the private sector, we would be all better off. But government programs are less efficient. Duh. Elon Musk is a great example. SpaceX is massively more efficient than NASA ever was. And now we're seeing Starlink, which is going to be massively more accessible and easier to use than anything else that we're using. That's interesting. I have a buddy of mine. I use that in Canada. We never had internet service in Canada. But when I was up there fishing in June, we had great internet because of Starlink. My buddy lives on Rockport Road. He just went on to Starlink. They're doing streaming and everything. It's pretty cool. The more the government spends based on political priorities, the less the taxpayer can spend, he goes on to say. And taxing Peter, I love this one, and taxing Peter to give money to Paul makes it even, my mom would always say that, we're robbing Peter to pay Paul. Taxing Peter to give money to Paul makes it harder for Peter to buy a house, while Paul probably can't afford one either. So redistribution limits opportunity. The more the government grows, the less affordable housing becomes, and yet no one talks about it. Ultimately, if populists want to address the problem of housing affordability, they need to give power to the people by letting them keep more of their money while government stops giving money to people while grabbing power for itself. That came from First Trust, boys and girls. So not my opinion, it's their opinion, but I wouldn't have shared it if I didn't agree with it. Let's take a quick break when we come back. Oh, let's don't forget about Kenny Bland Auctions. They're your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. And my buddy Lance Like at the Like Law Group, give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. When we come back, long-term care defined. What is it? What types? What is it, first of all? How do you pay for it if you need long-term care? And what are the different types of insurance that are available? This has come up so much, so often, and the industry is becoming so creative. I wanted to share some ideas with you. When we come back, it's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. You know, everybody, it seems like, especially people that are in my age bracket, maybe a little bit older, everyone seems to be dealing with an aging parent, right, at some stage of life. And it's tough, really tough, but it certainly makes you open your eyes to what could happen to you as well. You know, I've been through it twice with my father-in-law and my mom, and I've seen multiple clients go through it with their parents as well, and it sucks. Long-term, when you need long-term care, it sucks. Now, well, what is it? It's when you can't do two of your six activities of daily living by definition. Now, that came out of the 1950s, I believe, when some guy said, if you can't do this, 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 and this, then you are typically needing some long-term care. And I'm not sure where the term long-term care came from, but it's a term that we've all used and stuck to. So what are your activities of daily living? That's like eating, bathing, transferring, cognitive issues, right? Going to the bathroom on your own, or having, you know, those kind of things. If you have two of those six, and normally if you have one, you typically have two. Like if you have a cognitive issue, you probably have issues with incontinence as well. It's just kind of the way the whole thing rolls. So here you are, right? You're in a situation and you need some care. And the care is in levels. See, it doesn't mean you don't just jump right into a nursing home. And this is not just through personal experience, but through witnessing what actually happens in real life. Sometimes you need long-term care, and many times you do, before you actually get it. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, I wouldn't remember Misty's dad, right? He was confused. If he was in a routine, he was fine. He was still driving. And we go off to Florida. And on our way home, she noticed she missed some calls from her sister and her brother. And she calls, and he had gotten lost, and he had gotten confused and drove all the way to Mount Vernon, Illinois. So he was in the hospital there, and her brother went to get him. And I remember we were going to the Andrew Jackson's Hominage, I think that's how you pronounce that. And I remember saying, okay, let's go. So we get in the car, and we're kind of quiet for a second. And I said, you know, I knew this day would come. I just didn't know it was going to be today. And I think we all know that, right? When you see the writing on the wall. So he probably could have used some care, some maybe attention, stuff that we couldn't provide. But we waited until he got lost. Then you know, everything hits the fan. And, you know, you're taking car keys away. And you're trying to introduce caregivers. And that's what happens. It kind of ends up that way, especially with cognitive issues like that. Now, do we also go into long-term care facilities temporarily? Sure, because you have a hip replacement, a knee replacement, and you might need to go in for some rehab. Maybe you've had a stroke, you have to go in for some rehab. So long-term care stays in general aren't typically that long. That's why I don't know where the long-term care comes in. Some are 3 months, some are, you know, a few months. And Medicare will pay, right, for 100 days as long as you keep getting better. You have to recertify every 20, and that happens a lot. But what we're all concerned about is the legitimacy of long-term care, like being in a facility or needing care. Because Alzheimer's, dude, I'm telling you right now, for my mom, it kicked in probably in 16, and she just passed away last year. It was 19 is when everything hit the fan. So think about that, right? So I tell people that so they understand there's these different layers. So typically, you'll have maybe some help in your home. Everyone wants to stay home. That's the key. If you have a spouse that's still around, like my stepdad. See, my mother-in-law, she died in 1994, our first year of marriage. She died of ovarian cancer. So Rodney, my wife's dad, he was all alone. So it fell on us to make sure he was taken care of. And we handled his situation different because we were able to keep him in his home. He was able to get medical benefits through the VA because he was a Korean War veteran. He has some money, not a lot. We burnt through that money. And then we basically, Misty and I basically threw in the rest of the money to keep him at home. And then what we did, we took a lien against his house like a bank. So when he passed away, if we had to move him into a facility, he could become Medicaid eligible, that we wouldn't be risking the home. And that worked. We were able to keep him home all the way to the end and felt very accomplished for that. But not everyone has the capabilities or the ability to do that. So, but that's the way, no matter, a little bit of help at home. Maybe if you have a spouse, they take care of you. But at some point, you might need some help. So you bring in some caregivers. They are there for 2 or 3 hours a day, maybe 2 or 3 days a week. You know, it might cost you $20, $25, $30 an hour. So most people can handle that. You know, they can figure that into the budget. But what we're concerned about is when you have full-blown need of care, right? Where you're like, I could be 24 hours a day, which is where Misty's dad was at one point. Actually, for the last probably 2 years of his life, 24 hours a day care. And that's not cheap, especially when you're running a household at the same time. We were burning at about $150,000 a year to provide care, to provide food, to pay for taxes and insurance and maintenance on the house. So that's just the reality of it all. But let's say you go into a facility, assisted living first, maybe, and you're okay maybe taking care of some things, but you still need a little assistance with maybe medications or, you know, getting around or whatever. And then you go into a full-blown facility. That's kind of the way this all works. So I'm always like, well, how do you pay for it? Well, you can do it like we did, pay for it yourself, right? Rodney had no insurance. With my mom, my stepdad took care of her pretty much 100% of the time, and then we introduced some caregivers to come in and help out. And they would come in, you know, maybe three days a week and take her places in the morning or the afternoon, get her hair done. And then, you know, ultimately she passed away at home. But John took care of her like a saint. But, you know, here's the thing. My mom, we did have some insurance for her. And what we did, we bought a life insurance policy. My brother Dan and I actually implemented this when my mom first showed signs of slipping. Let's get her this policy. Life insurance, we didn't know what that is, but also you can accelerate the death benefit for long-term care if you can't perform 2 of your 6 activities of daily living. You can go on claim. And the cool thing about that was it was mailbox money. It just shows up and you can pay who and whatever you want. Traditional long-term care, it's, you know, if I never use it, I've lost it. So I'm not a huge fan of the traditional long-term care where you pay and pay and pay and pay and pay. And then when you go in to a facility, you try to flip on the benefits, they fight you like no other. And then also it's like health insurance. It can go up in price. I mean, those of you that have had long-term care insurance know what I'm talking about. It does go up in price. And then you get to the point when you need, when you're about the age, you're like, you know, I might actually use this in the next, you know, 5 or 10 years. They almost price you out of it. So I, if you can, if you have it, keep it, first of all. But if you're considering, I'm not even sure who sells it anymore because everyone's so freaked out about all the costs that they're on the hook for. So you have the life insurance version. You have figure out how much you can pay on your own practically, how much you want to pay on your own practically. Then you can fill it in with some kind of insurance policy. You can have an annuity policy where you can leverage up, put 100 in, get $300,000 to $500,000 of coverage. You die, you get your $100,000 back, maybe a little bit more. There's policies where you can transfer IRA money in, and then it will bleed over a 10-year period, and you pay taxes like a Roth conversion into a long-term care policy that will give you a benefit for your entire life. There are so many solutions out there, and I like the kind where I'm not losing money. I don't want to put money into something that I'm going to lose. So what do I have? I have the life insurance version, just like I had for my mom. Misty and I both have it. We have one child. He's a son. I doubt he's going to take care of me. My mom used to say, thank God I had a girl so someone would take care of me. And I would joke about this when I do presentations. It's like, you know, you're the only daughter and you have 2 or 3 brothers, right? And mom's not doing great. And here's what the girl does. Every day she checks on mom. She makes sure she's taken care of. The boys, they call the sister and they say, hey, sis, how's mom doing? And what the sister really wants to say is, well, if you really want to know, get your blah, blah, blah in the car, drive yourself down here and see for yourself. But you know what she says? She goes, oh, she has her good days and her bad days. But that's the reality of it. Boys are just wired like boys are wired. Men are wired the way men are wired. So the point is, first of all, let's be realistic about what the costs are. I think sometimes when you're being sold something, they make it sound much worse than it really can be. Now, it can be really bad, but it doesn't have to be. Most of it, home health care, you know, maybe some assisted living, and then the full-blown nursing home. People aren't in the nursing home more. They aren't in there for, you know, 20 years unless it's just a developmental disability that they have. I'm talking about getting older and you having issues. But figure out what you have, what you can practically pay for yourself that you want to pay for yourself, and just buy enough insurance to fill the gap and make sure you're not putting it into something that's if you don't use it, you lose it. I either got it back as a death benefit, I either get it back in benefits by using it, or something in between. And in my mom's case, we never tapped her policy. What we did, because we had home health care, and, you know, even though it was $20 or $25 an hour, you know, we paid for that out of her IRA instead, because it made more sense to do that than to use that policy. So then when she passed away, yeah, we had bled down her retirement account some, but she passed away, and then a tax-free death benefit came back to my stepdad, John, and it replenished his savings and everything else, and, you know, more money than he would need with his way of life. He plays golf at Cascades and travels infrequently, only usually if he's with us. So it's pretty good way to handle it. But it's definitely something I think all of us need to step back and think about. So I'm 54. I'm addressing it for myself. I already have addressed it myself. And I will tell you this, every single client that walks through my door, every single prospective client or person walks through my door, this is the discussion that we're having. Repositioning an asset, right? That's still an asset that can produce benefits if you need it. And when you need it, you're going to be glad you got it. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, do you have a pension in your future? How do you decide what options to take? I'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. You know, back in the 90s, there was an article called The Death of the Pension. And then I went ahead and wrote another article that I published back then about that, right? So how people, you know, the generations two above me had pensions and they had Social Security and they didn't have to rely on their personal savings for much. So they didn't have a lot of money. But then the baby boomers came along and they're like, nope, no more pensions for the most part. And you're on your own. And that's why we're finally seeing the great wealth transfer. You know, we've been talking about this for decades, if I feel like. And finally, you know, the latest baby boomers, the oldest baby boomers, are about 77-ish, like my dad's age. And unfortunately, some of them are dying, and a lot of them are dying with, you know, sizable retirement accounts that are being moved to the next generation. And it can be multi-millions. And then you maybe have farms or you have homes and you have other things that are getting passed. So I'm seeing it firsthand, boots on the ground, the great wealth transfer. But there are still people that have pensions. If you work for the government, if you're in the FERS program, right, you get about 25% of your income. I don't know if there's any civil service guys still working or gals still working, but if you were civil service, remember back in the, I think, 80s? Yeah, 85, 86, they tried to convince you to give it up. They promised you, oh, just move from the civil service plan to the FERS program, and look at all the money you're going to have in your TSP. You're going to have millions and millions of dollars. And I'm like, surely to God, no one took that bait. And thankfully, no one that I know took the bait. And they have 80% plus, about 80% of their last few years of income guaranteed, inflation adjusted for the rest of their life, right? How do you replace that when you have stock market crashes and all the other stuff that you have to worry about, inflation? So those are long gone. But they have the FERS. If you're a teacher, you have the Indiana plan, right? So you take your high 5 years average times 1.1% times 2 years of service. Usually that with Social Security can generally, if you have about 35 to 40 years in, will replace 100% of your take-home income. And then you don't have to have a lot of extra money. And we find that true with most teachers, administrators, and people in the school systems who we work intimately with, or you work for, you know, the county or something like that. There's still a few other pensions. Lilly still has a pension, I believe. Cummins still has a pension. There's Duke Energy. Some of them still have pension plans. So what happens when you get to the point you have to make an election? A lot of them are starting to suck you into the old Bloomington Hospital has a pension. They try to give you a lump sum, right? Well, some of them are based on a formula, and those are usually fair. If interest rates are high, your lump sum's lower. When interest rates were super low, your lump sum was higher. And that was really great, right, in 2020 and 2021. I mean, we were seeing monster lump sum options. So you have a – and not everyone gets a lump sum option, but a lot of plans will do that to say, I want to get rid of this liability. I don't want the risk of paying you for another 30 years. So here's a chunk of money. Take it or leave it. Well, most of the time you want to leave it. You say, no, I won't take it. I mean, the lump sums that the Bloomington Hospitals plan were offering you were laughable. If you looked at that and think, wait a second, you're giving me this and have to get rid of that? No way, deal off. Unless you were just super sick or super in need of money, would it make any sense to take the lump sum? Because when you take a lump sum, it's your money, right? You can go for, and trust me, everybody's different, but I just want you to know, don't always get sucked into taking the lump sum. Look at it strategically. Look at it from your longevity. Look at it from where your interest rates are. Everything needs to be considered before you decide, okay, I'll just take the bait. So what happens is when you do take a pension, you usually have a lot of options. And let's assume that you, well, let's talk about this. You can take the single option, which means when I die, it's gone. You're going to get the most money for that. Then you have survivor options. And even with the state plan, you can put a kid on as your survivor if you want, which I see that a lot, especially with unmarried people, because they want their pension to be given to their kids. So you put a survivor option on. Maybe it's 100%. If I die, I want 100% to go to my wife. Well, with that comes cost. So they'll take off a percentage, anywhere from about 20 to 25% on average, they'll take off the top. And that's a cost of money. It's a premium, so to speak, to ensure your pension for the next person. I'll come back to that in a minute. Or maybe it's 75%, maybe it's 50%, maybe it's 66 2/3. So for everything you give up, as far as your benefit goes, you're going to give up a little bit of money. For everything you give something up. The more you want, the more you give up. So if I only want 50% survivor, it may not cost me that much. That might be a good solution. Maybe it's 75%. Remember, especially if you're the higher income earner, they're going to lose their Social Security benefit. They're going to grab yours if you go first, and they'll continue on this pension. So again, every situation is different, but that's how it works. So one of the things I've really encouraged people to do that have pensions is to look down the road and say, is there a way that I can self-insure my pension rather than do it through the system? Now, what do I mean by that? Let's say I had a pension. And if I died, 100% went to my wife. And I died, and 100% went to her, and she lived a year or two and died. Guess what happens? All that money's gone. So all that money I gave up for all of those years to give her a pension that lasted 2 years is gone. But what if I said, hey, how much life insurance do I need to insure my own pension? And that's just a math problem. Let's say I needed $700,000. Well, okay, well, what's that going to cost me? Well, let's say it costs similar to what you were going to give up on your pension. Usually it's a little bit more, but to me, you get a lot more. Number one, if that scenario happens, guess what happened? When I died, my wife got $700,000 tax-free money to create her own pension. Then if she dies, guess what? It goes to our kids. That's self-insuring your pension, folks. What, you know, there's a lot of scenarios. What if my wife dies before me? Some plans allow you to step back up to your single benefit, single life. But listen, I still have that $1 million or $700,000 life insurance. What if I owned one of those policies that also provided me some long-term care like my policy does, right? And if you're younger and it's a little bit hard, like maybe in your 50s and you forecast forward, yes, I want to self-insure my pension, buy a 10-year level term. Buy it really cheap. And then when you get to the point of needing it permanently, you can convert it at the rate, basically the health you were at 54 versus 64 to a permanent policy. And folks, that's when you need a permanent policy, when you need it to solve a permanent event. Term policies are great to own for cheapness, but did you know less than 1% of all term policies actually end in a death claim? That's why it's so daggum cheap. Do I own term? Yes, absolutely. My last term policy is rolling off in about 6 more years when I turn 60. And then all I will own is permanent life insurance, which is there for a permanent purpose. My long-term care, wealth replacement, if I want to spend down some assets, it's going to replenish money just like it did for my stepdad. There's a lot of ways to skin this thing, guys. But it needs to be understood that pension decisions are important. All right? enough preaching from me. What about the retirement hurdles and how to get over them? I wrote about this in my 2016 book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, and then the revision in 2019. The Big Ten, major roadblocks that can undermine even the best retirement intentions. I'm going to kind of gloss over those when we come back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. See, that's why I need guests, right? So I don't sit here and preach to you the way I am doing. Someone said, how do you come up with new stuff every single week? I said, you don't really have to. It's like going to church. You know, there's one book called the Bible that gets preached out of every single Sunday. And I've been going to church my entire life. And I'm pretty sure they continue to use the same book. Now, they relate it in different ways, right? People can communicate it in different ways. And that's kind of the way it is here. The only difference between here is the Bible is the Bible. This stuff always changes. Tax laws change, investments are up, but I mean, it all changes. So it continues to give me stuff to talk about it. But sometimes you just need to reel it back to the basics, right? And that's what I'm kind of doing today. So chapter 3 of today's guide to retirement. Oh, by the way, we have probably several hundred of these books. I quit giving them out. I don't know why, because it's a great reference. If you want a copy, a free copy, absolutely free, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, please get a hold of us at cfci.us, and we will give you one absolutely free. You're going to have to come get it, because I'm not going to spend the money to mail it to you, but you can come and get it. And it goes through everything. You know, it goes through soup to nuts. We've been teaching a class based on these topics for 15 years at Ivy Tech called Retirement Planning Today, and our book's called Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. So we go through planning for retirement, kind of just getting in there and getting after it. Needs and expenses, retirement hurdles, which I'm going to talk about, available income sources, retirement plan distributions, investments, insurance, risk management, asset protection, estate planning, and more. That's all in Today's Guide to Retirement Planning. If you want your free copy, it is, how many pages long is this guy? It is 170-ish pages long. Yeah, 168 pages long. And you don't have to read it front to back. You can pick which segments you want to read and read those and get hopefully something out of it. But yeah, if you want a free copy, free. You don't have to even call or email. Just stop by the office and say, hey, I heard David talking about this. They might look at you strangely because I rarely communicate to them what I say on the show. But I'll try to remember to tell Jim Emmon Jr. that I offered the free book. So anybody that wants one, come on and get them, because we have a lot of them. And I need to do a revision anyway, because some of the things that I predicted would happen, like the termination of the inherited IRA as we knew it would go away, it went away. So there's a lot of, and I don't have anything in here about really serious about taxes. That's why 2025, the final drive. What You Need to Know to Win, that is still hot and heavy in people's hands. People love that book, by the way, and I'm appreciative of that. Had a great comment from a new listener, how much they enjoyed the book, how many parallels there were between him growing up and me growing up, and the passions of helping people make good decisions about their money. So, yeah, and that was an Amazon Daily bestseller. So pick that up, because 2025, the final drive, will, in my opinion, for the most part, expire when the tax code expires on January 1st of 2026. But then again, I have an opportunity, right, to write the 2025 final drive overtime, and I'm already putting my noodle together on that one. And hopefully, if I keep saying it, just like I did when I wrote the first book and the second book, visualize it, verbalize it, and that'll make you do it, because I'm one of these people that don't like to disappoint people. And if I sit here and promise you I'm going to write another book and I don't, and I look like a buffoon, I don't like that. I want to make sure I'm backing up my promises. So I'm not promising you I'm going to write a third book, but I have a feeling it's in my future. And it may not even be on investments. It may be on something else. I have a good idea on just kind of a self-help and how to win, and I don't know. And I'll do that. Maybe I won't. All right, so the Big Ten we write about in Chapter 3 says, although Americans enjoy the highest per capita income and standard living in the world, many of them find either unavailable to retire when they planned or end up living on the retirement years in virtual poverty. So why are the dreams derailed? Well, more often than not, it's because they failed to develop a comprehensive financial plan. I know it sounds corny, but it's true, making them vulnerable to what we call the 10 retirement roadblocks, forcing them to take costly and often irrevocable detours off the road to financial success. So the Big Ten, The Big Ten roadblocks can undermine even the best retirement intentions. In this chapter, we did talk about discussing different strategies to avoid the roadblocks. So here we go. They talk about failing. The number one thing I talked about in the book was failing to educate yourself about personal finance. Take your financial inventory by tracking your net worth and cash flow. Failing to invest early in life and on a regular basis. Now, if you're sitting here at 50 or 60 years old and thinking, well, that's good news, Dave. I'm way out of the woods on that one. It's okay. Because I find, especially if you're married, and once the kids are off the payroll, you are making the most money you've ever made, your highest income earning years, your debts are going down, your kids are out of the house, and you can save like a freak. And that's what you should be doing. But failing to use the tax laws to your advantage is another big one. Of course, I'm preaching to the choir here, I know. Failing to define your lifestyle goals in retirement. This is a big one, right? Because people retire and then they stare at the wall or go out and pick, you know, mow their grass. And my neighbor, I love Bob, but Bob mows his grass, I think, three times a day. But he has a great retirement, so don't let me fool you on that one. Failing to establish financial goals designed to help you achieve your lifestyle goals. Failing to allocate your assets properly and adjust those allocations as needed. Failing, this is a big one, especially Doug Hughes always talks about this, failing to plan for the unexpected, right? We have the known unknowns. We have the unknown knowns. But failing to plan for the unexpected, and that would be maybe like long-term care. Failing to take full advantage of your employer benefit plans and choose the smartest way to take money out of those plans. Failing to properly plan your estate, right? How many people want to leave a mess behind? Nobody. Failing to create a comprehensive financial plan, number 10. So those are the big 10, guys. If you want to copy the book, Today's Guide to Retirement Planning Revised in 2019, it's pretty much everything's in here solid. The only thing would be the some of the Social Security stuff, maybe a little, I don't know, that's good. I'm looking at it now. And really the only thing is the inherited IRA. But the cool thing is I predicted it in the book about retirement. Inherited IRAs changing and going away. I didn't predict how they would change them. I just thought it would go away. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, speaking of savings and your retirement plans at work, what are some of the ways you should be maxing those guys out? I'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. I'm in solo today. Dangerous thought, but I am here. On a Wednesday, believe it or not, recording for your benefit on a Thursday night. If you miss any of the program, of course, WGCLradio.com. You can find it on your favorite podcast place, wherever that is. And also Saturday mornings, 9 a.m. here on WGCL. It's a beautiful thing. All right, so I was talking about maxing out your benefits at work. So number one, HSAs, health savings accounts. If you have one, max it out and don't use it. Put everything you can into that guy, because after 65, you can't do it any longer. It's the triple threat of retirement: tax deduction in, tax-free growth, tax-free distribution. And you can pay yourself back for old things that happened to you, like the eyeglasses I bought, you know, a week ago. I could pay for those when I'm 67 years old, and I can take that money out tax-free. Max out your 401k plans, right? A lot of people, you know, say, I'm just going to put the money in to get the match. Max those guys out, especially right now. Especially if you're in a 24% bracket or maybe even 32, put it all into the Roth, all of it. And then in a couple of years, in 2026, I think, they finally booted that back. You can have your employer put their part into the Roth side. We need to build those Roth accounts up. We need to build more tax-free income. Are you one of these people that I was talking about that, you know, you're both working, you're making great money, the kids are gone, debts are down, and now you're wanting to save like a crazy person? Do you have something called a 457 plan? What is that? It's like a tag-on plan. Most school systems, most municipalities, most hospitals offer one, right? So if you're a school system, there's one available. So if you want to max out your 403b plan, the school system puts money in your 401a program, and you want to put more money away, there's a 457 plan that allows you to put the exact same amount of money away that you did in your 403b. It's all tax-deferred. I don't think there's a Roth option on that one, but there's another plan. So max these things out for sure, and that gives you the best chance to have as much money as possible in retirement. Plus, the more you save, the more practice you get on what you're spending. So if me and my wife were both making good money and we're practically saving one full paycheck, which I see it all the time, we're living on my paycheck, right? We get into retirement, we're like, yeah, I might want to spend a little bit more, you know, in retirement because I want to have that go-go retirement, the first 10 years where we're going to travel, we're going to do all kinds of great things. We're going to spoil our grandkids. I have the second 10 years of retirement where I start to slow down a little bit. Still like to go out to eat and all that kind of stuff. Maybe I'm not traveling quite as much. I'm still doing a little of it. And then the last 10 years where the thing you have to worry about is what I talked about in the first segment, which might be long-term care. But by that third segment, you're in your no-go years and you're slowing down, taking it easy, thinking more about other things. And what's cool, I think there's wonderful moments in every one of those phases. I always say whenever I've officiated a wedding or talked at a funeral, we have that honeymoon phase. We have that let's get through it phase. We have what's next stage? And then we have the final stage. And every one of those have rewards in there. And that's what you have to look for. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, and wrap it all up. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, so I started off by talking about you want affordable housing, build homes, cut government. Monday morning outlook from First Trust out of Chicago, Brian Westbury. I followed Brian for years and years and years. I knew that group before they were a big deal, and now they're a huge deal in our industry. But if you ever want a copy of it, I'm happy to provide it to you. And if you want a copy of the one I read earlier, I'd be happy to send that to you as well. Again, not political, folks. This is just like common sense. And it's like, how do you get more housing? How do you get more affordable housing? Well, I mean, obviously incomes have to go up. Interest rates need to go down. Government needs to make it easier to build in Monroe County. Thankfully, what we're here. Now, those of you that listen around the country or around the world, we have listeners. I saw one that's in Europe. You may or may not know what I'm talking about, but you probably do. It's the same about everywhere. So anyway, if you want to copy that, and then again, if you want to copy a free copy of Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, 2016 revised in 2019, soup to nuts, everything you need to know, it's in the book. So, and I would say it's something you could implement some things right away that could benefit you immediately as well. Here we are halfway through the year, guys. Be paying attention to what you're saving. Make sure you're maxing those things out. Make sure you understand we only have 1 year and 6 months left of the current tax law we're under, so take advantage of that. Don't worry, I'm going to continue to remind you. Consider looking at long-term care solutions. If you have a pension in your future, let's look at it now as far as what I might do to self-insure my pension. Make sure you read through the book and see in Chapter 3 the 10 big hurdles that we have to get over and how to do that. So just a lot of stuff here, a lot of stuff. So I don't know what you're doing this weekend, but I'm actually playing golf on Thursday in a charity event up in Indy, and that's why I'm recording on this wonderful rainy Wednesday. But I'm going to have a great weekend ahead of me. Going to go down to the Bloomington Speedway on Friday night, big sprint week. We sponsor a couple cars down there through Hoosier Speed. I was down at the shop last night visiting the guys and excited about this week. And then, and I'm excited about being back here again next week. So we'll have a great one for you. I promise that. Have a great weekend, everyone. Goodbye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.